Mary, bring her but to glorious flower.
We bring you now The Living of These Days, the weekly radio service of the Pilgrim Congregational Church, 2310 East 4th Street in Duluth. Now here's the minister, Dr. Royal F. Shepherd, Jr.
One of the things that we have to face in life is the knowledge that there are some things that we cannot change. There are some events that we cannot do anything to keep from happening. And yet even so, there is something that we can do. We can affirm our faith. We can express our love. There is a beautiful story in the larger story of Jesus that brings home this truth to us. It is the story of Mary who anointed Jesus at Bethany. In a few moments, I plan to share some reflections on that story with you.
Great God.
Now here is the story before us today. And while he was at Bethany in the house of Simon the leper, as he sat at table, a woman came with an alabaster flask of ointment of pure nard, very costly, and she broke the flask and poured it over his head. But there were some who said to themselves indignantly, "Why was this ointment thus wasted? For this ointment might have been sold for more than 300 denarii, which is to say for perhaps over $1,000, and it might have been given to the poor." And they reproached her. But Jesus said, "Let her alone. Why do you trouble her? She has done a beautiful thing to me. For you always have the poor with you, and whenever you will, you can do good to them. But you will not always have me. She has done what she could. She has anointed my body beforehand for burying. And truly I say to you, wherever the gospel is preached in the whole world, what she has done will be told in memory of her." There is still, I think, a dose of Poor Richard's almanac in the veins of most Americans. We deplore waste. We commit more waste, of course, than any people in the history of the world, but we like to hide it. We don't like to see it right out there in the open. We like to mix all our good deeds with a strong dash of prudence. However freely we give, we want to be sure that there is some tangible profit for the person who receives. But there are outpourings of the heart that cannot be added up in dollars and cents. There are deeds of love that cannot be fitted to the ordinary rules of judicious charity. There are sacrifices, the grace of which cannot be set down in a bookkeeper's ledger. Such a deed was that of the woman who anointed Jesus with costly oil. We'll call her Mary, for though she is not identified by that name in Mark's Gospel and in Matthew and Luke, she is in John's, as Mary, the sister of Martha. As Jesus sat eating with his disciples, Mary broke open a jar of expensive ointment and poured the contents over Jesus' head. The value of the ointment in terms of the purchasing power of modern currency has been placed as high as $500, perhaps with inflation $1,000, I don't know. What shocking waste. The deed seemed hopelessly misguided. And yet Jesus remarked with gentleness that she had done a beautiful thing. Why? Why beautiful? Because here was revealed the abandon of worship. Measured by the practical wisdom of those who were seated around the table, Mary's act was impetuous nonsense. Granted that she wished to honor Jesus, what less fitting way could she have chosen? Had not Jesus instructed his followers to share their worldly goods with those in need? Was he not himself an example of voluntary poverty? Was he not sitting at this moment in a poor man's house eating a poor man's fare? How out of place was this rash deed? The assembled guests looked on with exasperation as the precious oil dripped to the floor. It might have been sold for 300 denarii, they lamented, and the proceeds distributed among the poor. Well, we've heard that complaint before. Twice I can recall when I was a boy taking friends into a very, very large cathedral. And on both occasions, my companion would stiffen up and sort of shield himself against the compelling sublimity of that place. And each time I was told in so many words, well, it's very large and it's beautiful, of course, but think of all the money and all the labor expended here, money and labor that could have been used to help the poor. In fact, I think this is often the typical comment of American tourists when they look at the great cathedrals of Europe. They see these mighty architectural achievements erected to the glory of God, and they shake their heads. What lavishness, they exclaim. What waste, when there is so much squalor all about us. Well, I think I would prefer that we first took care of the poor and then built our cathedrals. And yet, as Jesus said, the hard reality is that the poor are always with us. If all the churches in the world were constructed like garages, it is doubtful that the poor would profit from the money saved thereby. Now, of course, that's a saying which has often been abused. On Palm Sunday of this year, the writer Kurt Vonnegut preached the sermon in St. Clement's Episcopal Church in New York City. Yes, he preached the sermon there on this very passage, except as it appears in the Gospel of John. He said, I've always been troubled by this saying, the poor are always with us, because so often it was used as an excuse for neglecting the needs of the poor. But he said, I've decided that this saying of Jesus is a kind of, well, a kind of sarcasm, pointing to the hypocrisy of Judas and the others who criticized Mary's action. Writes Vonnegut, this is too much for that envious hypocrite Judas, who says, trying to be more Catholic than the Pope, hey, this is very unchristian. Instead of wasting that stuff on your feet, we should have sold it and given the money to the poor people. To which Jesus replies, Judas, don't worry about that. There will still be plenty of poor people left long after I'm gone. And says Vonnegut, this is about what Mark Twain or Abraham Lincoln would have said under the circumstances. In other words, Jesus isn't justifying or the presence of the poor or saying fatalistically that they'll always be there and that therefore we need not be concerned about that fact. But he is saying, look here, quit this hypocritical complaint. You can do good to the poor if you really want to. But right now, let's recognize the devotion of this woman. The same tourist who shakes his head at European cathedrals is only too prone to close the door to the naked and hungry who live within their shadows. Jesus' friends spoke about what might have been done for the poor, but it is easier to talk than to give. Better the tokens of lavish worship than the empty words of garrulous and often phony do-gooders. Better the recklessness of sentiment than the measured strictures of practical self-righteousness. Sometimes the abandon of worship is more profitable than the economy of duty. Not even the poor live by bread alone. It is better that the poor man feed his soul on the steeple across the street than that he spend days and days with nothing better to look at than row on row of tenements like his own. It were better that Mary honor her Lord with joy while he was still with her than that she anoint his corpse with remorse after he was dead. She did what she could. Mary's act cannot be tested by the ordinary standards of practical goodness. It was an act of worshipful appreciation. It rose out of the fullness of her heart. It poured out of her with the carefree abandon of pure adoration. Her deed needed no justification except her own sincerity. It was a work of art, a thing of beauty. Mary's deed was beautiful because it expressed the intemperance of love. For love has a way of breaking the rules, and in its unlawfulness, it is magnificent. Now, far be it from me to counsel the careless indulgence of passion, and yet how gloomy the world would be without love's little excesses. Consider the young man who was about to buy an engagement ring for his betrothed. His father is a hard-headed fellow, and he wants to give his son some practical advice. Son, he says, now it's silly to go out there and spend several hundred dollars on a diamond ring. If, your young lady expects that kind of extravagance, you'd better think twice about this marriage. It wouldn't really be fair to her. You know, later on there'll be something she really needs, like a washing machine. And then you won't have the money. Let me give you some practical advice. Now, it'll only cost a few dollars, and nobody will ever know the difference. Go out and get her one of those imitation diamonds, one of those zircon things. Well, that's sound advice, I suppose, even allowing for the sexist image of the roles. But what does the young man do? He goes out and buys a diamond ring anyway. And however practical his girl may be, you may be sure of one thing. She wears that ring. As the years go on, she waxes fatter and the ring pinches her finger. It is a nuisance. But will she take it off? Never. Many is the time she wishes that she had the money that went into that diamond. Yet she will see herself reduced to the last depths of poverty before she will part with it. For in the extravagance of the gift is the seal of her husband's love. Who would believe a love that was always judicious? Love's scatterbrained escapades are the common stuff of true affection. Would you censor love's intemperance? Would you sleuth it down? Look under any Christmas tree, and there it is. There you'll spot it. Peer into the package that Mr. Jones is carrying home on the evening of his 25th wedding anniversary. There you will catch him with the goods. Listen in on the telephone conversation of a poor soldier or a young tourist overseas who has squandered their meager savings on a 3-minute conversation with his or her family. There's your evidence. Now bring intemperate love into court. You'd better be an able prosecutor. No jury in the world is disposed to convict these people. For they are doing beautiful things. It was this sort of a lawless adoration that Mary brought to Jesus in her jar of ointment. It touched him deeply. He rebuked those who rebuked her. For there is nothing quite so pitiful as repudiated generosity. 300 denarii. Well, had he possessed such a sum, Jesus would certainly have given it to the poor. But Mary poured down her whole heart upon his head. The gift was too precious to refuse. Mary's deed was beautiful because it showed the abiding wisdom of sacrifice. There is something in extravagant self-denial that puts to shame all purely dutiful philanthropy. There is a power here that binds giver and receiver together. There is a treasure laid up in the memory that far outlives the gift itself. You remember O. Henry's little story, The Gift of the Magi? It tells of a poor young couple who lived in a wretched flat back at the turn of the century. Their possessions were few, but there were two of which they were very proud. One was Jim's gold watch, a family heirloom, and the other was Della's long brown hair. Christmas was at hand, and neither Jim nor Della had the means to buy the other a present worthy of their devotion. So Della went out and sold her beautiful hair. With the money she received, she bought a platinum fob chain for Jim's watch. That evening, Jim came home to dinner. He too brought a present. It was a set of jeweled combs for Della's hair. To pay for the combs, Jim had sold his watch. Now that simple story, I suppose, will abide among the monuments of American literature when many a more sophisticated story has been relegated to forgotten archives. And why? Well, it's a sentimental tale, of course, but it also says something very powerfully about what O. Henry himself calls the wisdom of sacrifice. For he says in his conclusion, "Let it be known that of all who ever gave or received gifts, these were the wisest." Sacrifice has a wisdom all its own. Prudent heads begrudge the excess, but adoring hearts delight in it. We can imagine, indeed, that Satan whispered into the ear of Jesus at that second temptation in the Garden of Gethsemane. Whispered, "No, this is foolishness. The human race isn't worth it. Let them stew in their own juice. Let them be brought before the bar of judgment and destroyed. Your life is more precious than all the ordinary sinners in creation." Now that too was sound advice. But Jesus, thank God, did not heed it. He gave. He gave extravagantly. And we remember. We remember because in the giving was a power that redeems. We know that God loves us because he gave his only begotten Son, that whoever believes in him should not perish. By the account book of prudence, we certainly are not worth it, but by the grace of God, we are saved. Here was Mary then, foolish Mary. She broke in upon that serious, solemn, mourning little gathering with the reckless abandon of a worshipful soul. She gave her unneeded gift out of the rash intemperance of love. She sacrificed the most precious thing in her possession. She did a beautiful thing. And truly I say to you, wherever the gospel is preached in the whole world, what she has done will be told in memory of her. We remember Mary. Would that our hands might so anoint that brow with beauty. For by our sins, we have encircled it with a crown of thorns.
Oh, dear.
I have something for you to do today. I'd like you to think about two questions. The first question is, what is the biggest single problem that religion presents to you? And the second question is, what is the biggest single issue facing the world today? Now, I would take it as a great favor if you would try to answer one or both of those questions in a few words, and then send your answers to me. Put down the first thing that comes to your head. You don't need to sign your name. All I want is just your reflections on those questions. Let me repeat them. What is the biggest single problem that religion presents to you? It can be a belief problem. It can be a more of a practical problem. You interpret it as you wish. But what is the biggest problem that religion presents to you? And the second question is, what is the biggest single issue facing the world today? Now, if you'd like to send me your answers to those questions, send them to me, Royal Shepherd, at Pilgrim Church, 2310 East 4th Street, Duluth, Minnesota, 55812. Pilgrim Church, 2310 East 4th Street, Duluth, Minnesota, 55812. I'd like your answers. I'd like to use them in my own thoughts, in my own preaching. And now may God grant you the wisdom and the courage for the living of these days.
Have been listening to The Living of These Days, the weekly radio service of the Pilgrim Congregational Church, with Dr. Royal F. Shepherd, Jr., minister. For copies of today's sermon or comments on this program, please contact the Pilgrim Congregational Church, 2310 East 4th Street in Duluth, 55812. And please join us next week at this same time for The Living of These Days.